Welcome back to the Mom Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick, and as always, Chris Lucian is the co-host. And today, I'm very excited to have Camille Bell with us. We're going to be talking about who she is, how she started mobbing, how she mobs today with agile technical skills. So to get us going, Camille, can you share a little bit about yourself?
Okay. So I've been in computing like forever. I started in Fortran too. I have a couple of degrees, but what's really important is what I've learned on the job. And the most exciting things that I've learned over the past decade are test-driven development and agile technical facilities in general, pairing, and then mobbing. And I've been really excited in how mobbing helps me do everything else better.
Nice, nice. Well, how did you hear about mobbing and how did you try it out and get started?
Well, I was down at a contract in Virginia. It was my first day on the job. And I was working with Dave Nicolet. And the very first thing we did is that we mobbed with a team. I had no idea what mobbing was. I'd never heard of Woody. I knew what pair programming was. What we'd had there is that the teams had all been, we had teams of a combination of formal testers and developers. And the formal testers previously had been purely manual testers. Both the devs and the testers had been through a few days of training on test-driven development or behavior-driven development. But as you probably know, if you just teach some stuff to folks and then you walk away, it doesn't stick. So we used mob programming to make it stick. And what we did is the first team I was working with, as I say, I'd never seen this before, had taken weeks usually to get a user story finished. And within 2 days of this intense mobbing all day, they had finished a user story, start to finish, including full test coverage. They were blown away, and I was pretty similarly impressed.
Nice. So what do you think it was? Was it just removing of communication impediments, or what did the team observe?
I think it was a combination of things. One, yes, there were fewer impediments. But two is that we had everybody in the same room and they were talking to each other. And it's amazing how much that helps. There weren't any distractions. You know, there weren't the 5 million useless meetings that tend to go on in large companies. Anytime somebody had a problem, somebody else was in the room was there with an idea, either myself or Dave as coaches, or the developers and testers themselves, you know, suggesting things, coming up with ideas, and dedication and making it work.
Nice. Yeah, so you talked about making it stick, and I really like that phrase and how mob programming can make learning stick. In what ways do you think it helps make it stick, or from what you've observed as you've used it for training or that kind of thing?
Well, there's a Yogi Berra phrase I like. In theory, there is no difference between theory and practice. In practice, there is. So learning test-driven development or a variety of other skills, behavior-driven development or whatever, it's like learning a musical instrument or a new language. It takes lots and lots and lots of practice. You don't just read a book, you don't just attend a class, you actually have to do it. So from a learning perspective, mobbing is incredible for making it stick. It's also incredibly useful for learning things you had no idea how to do. And I can discuss a little bit of that a little bit later, but it's just wonderful in that regard. The other thing is team building. So when you've working with some classical teams, and they have developers or testers and managers and product owners or customer reps or whatever you want to call them, they have this kind of hierarchy and differentiation, and I do this and you do that. And what they don't have is shared experience. They don't have that feeling that we're all in it together. They don't understand how each other live. Really fascinating case, and this was on the same client, is when we had a mob programming session with teams that now had been doing it for a while, and a manager walked in. And it's the first time he had any clue really what it was like to be a developer or to be a tester. And I think it was the first time that they had a clue of what some of his real concerns were either. So
empathy building.
Oh, it's enormous for empathy building. And with that, all sorts of barriers can be broken down because it's no longer us or them. It's, you know, you or me, it's, we're all in it together.
Yeah.
So that helps enormously.
So, you know, did this manager know about what, you know, what they were doing? Like, did they know that they were mobbing or?
Yes. He knew that they were mobbing, and he knew that we had been brought in as consultants.
Yeah.
And that we were doing trainings, and that we were mobbing with the teams. And that the teams had now decided that they wanted to mob whether we were there or not.
Yeah.
At least some of the time. Now, different teams, it was different amounts. Some teams tended to mob on really hard problems. Other teams dedicated, 2 to 4 hours a day to mob. Mm-hmm. And given the amount of time they had in useless meetings, that was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So he knew what was supposedly this mobbing thing is going on, but of course the term mobbing to a lot of folks, it's like extreme programming was to a lot of folks, the word is scary,
Scary, opaque, right, yeah.
And discovering that it's collaboration turned up to 11, and it's counterintuitive to a lot of folks in management, the same way pairing was counterintuitive, that when you get all of these people working together on the same thing, in the same space, at the same time, you get single piece flow.
Yeah.
You get things out the door. You don't get just part of something done. And that's a new experience for a lot of companies, and certainly a lot of people in management, especially if they've been taught old school management and their familiarity with getting things done is using Gantt charts.
Yeah.
some of these people are now called Scrum Masters, but they're still traditionally thinking like command and control managers. So yeah. It's a huge change for some of them. It's also a huge change for some senior devs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the whole thing. I think you said it well, where the idea that somebody might work on something and never see the completion of whatever they ended up working on, especially many specialists experience this, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to make this database backend for you, but I have no idea what the front end is going to look like. And I'm probably months away from seeing the result of my own work. And I might be moved on to something else by the time that happens. And so the transition of everybody being there and getting a vertical slice done.
Now it's still a challenge in large companies, yeah, who are very stovepiped,
yeah,
to get everybody you need in the room.
Yes.
You know, you'd like to have a DBA in the room. You'd like to have a whole lot of other people. We at least had access to DevOps, but they weren't part of the team, but it was better than some. We were using Safe, which has an awful lot of overhead.
Sure.
But it has a few positive things about it as well. One of them being that at least they recognize it's necessary to have their system engineering team, otherwise known as DevOps, available.
Yeah.
So that helps. Problem you have in large companies is that you have these specialty skills and they're in specialized teams and other people don't know those skills or have permission to use those skills. I think the more we do mobbing, the more those skills will disseminate. Mm-hmm. You know, you may not be the best DBA in the world, but perhaps you can at least do some simple stuff.
Yeah.
Take some of the load off of people that are, you know, that are, and give them time to do the stuff that's really hard or more challenging or requires coordination between multiple teams.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have a whole host of questions because this is a lot of fascinating stuff. But the one thing you just said that really interests me. So if I'm someone in a context that has a lot of this overhead and separation of specialties going on, it sounds like you've been in a context like that. How did you help facilitate? How did you help facilitate the discussion, the coordination of setting up a mobbing type event of some kind? Any tips and tricks there for maybe some of our listeners might be in this spot?
Okay. So for one thing, so different teams, different approaches. So I've had the advantage that I'm coming in as an agile coach. And so at least they're open to some amount of change. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean they're open to maybe as much change as you might like. One team that I was working with in Virginia, what I did is that they had some very experienced developers, but they had a really hard problem and they didn't know how to use several of the tools that they were working on. And so we just all grabbed them around a table with a monitor. They at least had things physically set up well and said, okay, let's all work on it together. And they got their hard problem solved quickly, you know, that afternoon. So that can be a way to bring folks in. The other thing that I've found that helped is most companies have some sort of, you know, learning hour or something or other that they dedicate that folks are allowed. Maybe it's over lunch. Y'all, maybe not. Better if it isn't, but even if it is, and meanwhile people are smearing pizza all over their face.
And the keyboards.
Yeah, well, we try and get them cleaning their fingers before they get on the keyboard. But running through some code katas or other kinds of challenges with them over lunch, having them switch. In the particular case where I was doing this, we were switching on, because they were very simple katas, on getting to green as opposed to timers. I discovered timers later, and I'll tell you about the rat hole I ran into not using timers a little later, because rat holes are one of the things that are worth knowing about. So that's helpful. It's also helpful getting to know the people. So there's two sort of situations you end up with as a coach. One is they have been told that they are supposed to do whatever you tell them to do, and that it may include mobbing. The other is that you've just been thrown into the team and they tell you, oh, okay, you have these three or six or however many teams you have, go coach. And they're, you know, not in this, and they've got all this work they have to do, and trying to get anybody's attention is really hard. So in that case, setting up a regular time, you know, an hour with each team, you know, at some particular schedule really helps. Getting to know the people on the team really helps. Figuring out who the influencers are on the team and getting them on board. I mean, it's like any sort of change issue. You know, who do they listen to? Who do they respect? Can you get their ear? And sometimes that's a senior dev. Sometimes it's somebody that's got a lot of domain experience. It can be different people on different teams. And sometimes you just get a group of folks who are young and eager and just want to learn. And that's really easy.
Nice. Cool. Well, I'm really interested now about the rat hole, now that you mentioned it.
Okay. So one of the rat holes that I've run into. So I was coaching a team in Virginia, Northern Virginia for this one, as opposed to Southern Virginia for the first experience. And we were working on a number of code katas. I was trying to get them comfortable. Now, they had not had any training in test driven development or behavior driven development or anything like that. And that can be more of a challenge if you don't have them. If you have them full time, that's one thing. But if you only have them, you know, for like an hour or so, trying to get that going is a challenge. And the rat hole that I got into in that particular case was they were very experienced devs, and this was part of the challenge. And instead of trying to do things in baby steps and trying to get to green, because I was used to switching on green, which works with an experienced team. But when people aren't experienced, and particularly when you don't have a timer set up, and not so great. So they were coming up with all sorts of unnecessarily complications to the Roman numeral problem, kata. Okay?
I've done this one several times, so I can already I think I've seen this, yeah.
You know, and we started them on FizzBuzz, and then I'd move to my version of the coin changer, which looks for the minimalistic number of coins that you can return.
Yeah.
And it's a regression algorithm. So, you know, I was thinking that by this time, because they're really smart, they should do it in baby steps, and then they see that it's a regression algorithm, and then they, since they were doing Java and an old version, and which doesn't have some of the best data structures in the world, you know, you see that, you know, you can start putting these things into a couple of arrays, but oh no, they were going into all kinds of complications in trying to figure out how to determine everything all at once. Big design up front. So a timer would have solved that problem. Me just putting a, hey, time out here, let's revert to the last green code we had and take it in baby steps from there would have solved that problem. So one of the things that I've learned is that the way you facilitate a team that has little experience versus a team that has more experience is very different. And the team that has less experience, and they may be absolutely brilliant in whatever their particular subject is, but they are not brilliant in doing things in baby steps. They are not brilliant in finding the simplest thing that could possibly work. They are not brilliant in writing their tests first and having the patience to work with them being red first and then getting to green and then refactoring and allowing a little bit of mess and then cleaning it up. With those folks, they need a stronger lead. Mm. And if you're the facilitator, that needs to be you. Particularly if this is a case where you're only with that team for a certain short amount of time. Because what can happen if you're only there for an hour or two with them, then they can get soured on the whole process. And you don't want that, you know, because what they're really getting soured on is their own going into rat holes, as opposed to getting soured on the whole process of mobbing. But they don't know that.
Yeah.
That's like, I imagine, oh, we're going to do mobbing. And then my first mobbing experience is watching people debate about tabs versus spaces or some rat hole, right? You know what I mean? That'll ruin your impression of mobbing, right? So you don't want that.
Well, that was a waste of time. You should have never had people talk to
Yeah. Wow. So this might almost be a little bit of therapy for me. So I have also been in mobs with people who are big design up front type mindset. How do you, what are ways you help coach that? Is it, you know, we're going to try this and then you can discard it, or, you know, what are ways you approach for them to?
Well, I think it kind of depends what you're doing.
Okay.
If you're using katas to teach, then one of the things you can do is you can start with very, very simple katas. Mm. If you're working with legacy code, that's a much bigger challenge. You know, if you're working with code that already exists, because the very first thing you need to do is you need to put some tests around it for anything to be safe. So one of the things you need to do is introduce them to things like code smells, which I tend to use Sparrow Dex for. That's a technique that Llewellyn Falco has come up with, and I'll give you a link for that. Yeah. But they're really useful, and it's very collaborative, and they're a lot of fun. And the other thing is that they need to figure out what pieces of code, you know, can be extracted or pulled into a method or whatever, and looking at those scenes. Mm. Now, so that's for when they get to the refactoring, but before we can do that, we need to have some type of tests around whatever piece we're working on. Other thing is to not let them get discouraged and realize, no, we're not going to be able to refactor everything. If you're not touching it and it works and you haven't touched it in 5 years, we probably don't care. You know,
yeah.
It's a big mess, but it's a big mess that works.
Yeah.
All right. If you're in it now, it's something that it's going to bite you, and it's biting you now. And let's see what we can do about making it better. But for that, and there are different names for this. Sometimes they're called approval tests, but basically it's find tests at a very, very high level that show what the behaviors are that we're expecting out of the code, mm-hmm. so that when we go refactor that mess, we know we haven't broken anything. Because that's absolutely the worst thing you can do, is come up with a lot of great ideas and how to do stuff, and then all of a sudden the code is, it may look cleaner, but it actually doesn't work.
Yeah. Break it all, yeah.
Yeah. So if you can do that, then show them simple things that they can do, like just cleaning up a lot of the clutter in the code, getting rid of comments they don't need, naming things where you can that you understand what they're doing. So those are some things that can help.
Right on. I've been asking a lot of questions, Chris. Do you have any questions?
Yeah. So in your experience with mobbing, it sounds like you use it often as a coaching technique and things. How often do you think people begin mobbing on their own versus not? And have you heard reasons as to why that has happened or not?
You mean why they do and why they don't?
Yeah.
So folks that have success with their mobbing like to keep it up.
Mm-hmm.
Folks that have not felt intimidated by the process are much more likely to keep it up.
Sure.
Some folks, and I find this more of an issue with senior devs than I do with junior devs, feel that mobbing slows them down, or that they're not shining as much, or something of that sort.
Sure.
And so to try and encourage that type of person, you need to sort of show them how they can be a leader and how they can share their knowledge with others and how that helps. It also helps if the company's HR system does not, you know, reward people for coming up, you know, for being those I'm working until midnight heroes.
Yeah.
That, you know, so there's organizational problems that can get in the way with that. And if you can if you're working with folks and you can address several factors simultaneously, that can help. Some companies that do that, and it's a basic lean concept of that the organization as a whole is something that needs, well, it needs better collaboration and better understanding and all those things that we think are good with mobbing and more egalitarianism.
Yeah.
It's, you know, not innate in most corporate culture.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of, I've forgotten about this story. It was a previous organization. I was having a one-on-one conversation with somebody. I was basically trying to find out who were the early adopters who wanted to try mobbing and test-driven development stuff. Mm-hmm. And one individual I was talking with one-on-one basically said, yeah, I bet we'll have no bugs and I bet we'll be more efficient. And I think it's good and it would have all the right things, but I can't go on with my individual metrics or image looking the way it does if I did it, you know, kind of thing. And it was like, yeah, this is pointing at a systemic problem, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's individual choices being made there, but he's feeling heavy systemic pressure, right, of some kind, right? And so whether it's implicit or explicit, it's there, right? So, yeah.
Have you ever worked with an organization and suggested that they abandon this kind of individual reward system in favor of something that's more group oriented and been successful with that? Like, is that something that, like, would you do that going into an organization, or is it something that takes more finesse, or how?
That takes somebody that has an ear of the C-suite.
Got it. Yeah.
Usually I don't have that level of access. Easier to do in smaller companies where there's, you know, less division between folks.
Sure.
But I certainly know companies that do, and it's one of the things that, for instance, those that follow lean practices in addition to other agile practices look at. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because they are looking at getting something from concept to cash and all the way through the product pipeline. And all of those, HR is one of the things that can get in the way.
Yeah.
It can also facilitate if done right, you know, make things better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I had the experience of going from, you know, one type of organization to the other. So, you know, seeing, I was in a situation where collaboration was thoroughly discouraged by the financial systems, even to the point where people were not getting bonuses and things like that.
Yeah.
And then in contrast, being at my current organization where everybody has kind of the same bonus based on the performance of the entire company. Like that. So like, there's two very like stark differences, which have been, And I really, you know, I like the latter than the former a lot because collaboration is incentivized so much more.
And it's good for the company.
Yeah.
Because you get the best out of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to what's just best for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned something earlier to shift topics a little bit. That you would go into a mobbing session with intended learning, but then you would come out of it with that objective being met or not, but plus unintentional learning, where you learn things you didn't expect to learn. Can you go a little more into that, if you don't mind?
Well, so one of the things that surprised me, okay, as far as what I learned, is I was really surprised that it's easier to get people to mob than it is to get them to pair program. this is probably not a surprise for you because you've, you know, been doing this for some period of time, but I had expected, because it required the whole team doing this, that this would be harder. It's easier because it's really hard to turn down your whole team and say, I'm too busy, where it's pretty easy to turn down one person. So that was a definite surprise of something I learned. Other things I've learned since I've gotten into this is I've learned hey, how to help people recognize what a regression algorithm is, the transformation priority principle, and how to use katas to slowly grow that. So there are a bunch of things. Well, right now, I'm working with the Code Liberation Front, and we're doing mobbing every Friday. And one of the things everybody in the group, including me, is learning is functional programming with F#, which I know nothing about walking into it. So that's one of the really other cool things about mobbing, is that you can try stuff. It's better if somebody in the group has some kind of clue, because then the learning is much faster. But it is still faster learning in a group on something that's new to everybody than it is learning alone by a lot. Especially if you get your hands on the keyboard and then somebody says, okay, so what should you do next? And you're a navigator sort of role. And even if you don't know the language, well, if you're, you know, have enough programming experience, you can figure out what the kind of things can be are needed in sort of a pseudocode fashion, and somebody else knows what the details are. And so it just, so that's a learning. One of the other things is different ways of sharing it in different styles of mob programming. So one of the things that I participated in and helped facilitate the last one was the Global Day of Mob Retreat. And I think that you had a couple of folks on that earlier. And that was a really interesting, I had been to one before that they had sort of a dry run. And then helping to facilitate that with a bunch of different people was really interesting. It's particularly interesting that now we're doing everything in this COVID world. And so everything's remote. We were using Cyber Dojo, which works pretty well. And we were switching by using URLs rather than physically switching the keyboard, because Cyber Dojo checks you in every time you run a test. And it's not so good about dealing with the difference between Mac keyboards and PC keyboards. It gets a little wonky. But one of the things that worked is that we had, I don't know, about 25 or so people, and we had created 5 breakout rooms. And we made sure that we could distribute folks based on skills. So we asked everybody to give them some sort of idea about how comfortable they were with test-driven development. And we made sure that there was a varying level of skills in each breakout room. And that worked well. Another thing that we did deliberately that worked well is that we asked people to volunteer and switch to another team to experience what happens when you're on a team and then all of a sudden you lose somebody and you need to bring somebody in that's new that doesn't know what you were doing. And this was quite a variety of things. It was all the same kata that we were working on. But one team was working in C++. Another one, two teams were working in Python. One was working in Java. One was working in JavaScript. So quite a bit of variety of somebody just jumping into a new team and possibly a language that they weren't terribly familiar with. Some people weren't, for sure. Nor the test tools. Some people had never, you know, it's like they'd maybe heard of TDD, but that was about it. Could spell it, but then even those of us that don't spell very well could spell TDD. And so that was pretty cool. One of the other things that was interesting is that not all groups within that were equally comfortable with each other. So sometimes somebody decided that they wanted to move from one team to another team. And then all of a sudden when the team was reconfigured, the group worked better. So that that was interesting. That was, ways of facilitating. One of the things that I think we're all learning now is how to work remotely. And, that's an interesting challenge.
Nice.
Things I might have done on whiteboards before when I was explaining something, I'll now put together a few PowerPoint slides so it doesn't take forever for something to show up. And then they've got something afterwards to look at for reference. And then we go into what kata or training or activity that we're doing.
In doing this remote, I guess what kind of experiences have you had with remote mobbing? And so I know the Global Day of Code Retreat was remote, right? And I guess, what are the aspects of that? What differs? What's the same? And what do you like? What don't you like? That sort of stuff.
Well, one thing that is a challenge is keyboards. Code repositories, where people are putting things. So for things like working on katas, where you can use something like CyberDojo, it's pretty easy. For other things where somebody has to make a Git commit to something or other, and you're not sure that everybody's environment is all set up the same way, more of a problem. One group I was working with, though, that I did this before everybody had to go remote because of COVID, but we had one team in Texas and another team, well, actually they were kind of sub teams. They were part of the same team, but one group was in Texas, another group was in Northern Virginia. And so we used the tool that everybody was using, WebEx, I think it was. I'm trying to remember it anyway.
Yeah, that's one of them.
one of those tools that I previously hated.
Yeah.
Because what everyone was doing with that tool previously had been setting up meetings with hundreds of people, tons of PowerPoint slides, everybody falling asleep, and then doing other work simultaneously. Total waste of time. But what it was good for was mobbing.
Nice.
Because it allowed anyone to, we set up one laptop, and that was the main laptop. And everybody else, instead of what I usually do, is I have people actually physically go around a table if they're in, a conference room, and just play musical chairs. In this case, we just switched who had control of the keyboard. And everybody could, in our room that we were in Virginia, we had it displayed on the large conference room screen. And I'm not sure what I think the folks in Texas were actually just displaying on their own laptops. But that worked remarkably well.
Nice.
And so that was pretty cool. Now, we were in time zones that weren't that far apart. It's off by about an hour. I wouldn't, now I have seen, because I've been in mobs where we've had folks from where it was centered in Detroit, and we had folks, well, I'm in Maryland, same time zone, not a big deal, but we had people from Kenya, India, Europe. I don't think we had any West Coasters, but we had people from all over the place. And that was really cool. It was also some of the folks in Africa and India and to some extent Germany. I think we had some folks from Spain too. Were really, really dedicated because they were working at odd hours because they just wanted to be part of this mob so much. And that was cool. That's exciting. So, but time zones can be a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think you'd want to do that, as your regular day job working on that. It's one thing to be have that long a distance in time zones if you're doing something for a weekend or just one day, and it's another thing to be doing that if you're
Yeah, all day, every day.
All day, every day. Yeah, wouldn't want to do that all day, every day. I've had 7 a.m. meetings with India, and they were at 7 p.m., and we both hated it.
Yeah, that's rough.
Well, I thought maybe one more topic before we close, and that was, I guess I'd never really thought about it before. So we've talked about on the show how with mob programming, a lot of things come built in, like, you know, lean, low whip, collaboration. But it's also built-in team building. You know, I've never thought about it that way, where, you know, a lot of leaders or facilitators or coaches, HR, will spend a lot of time trying to do team building because their day-to-day work are basically people working alone, synchronized, but still they're really working alone. They're not like a real team, right? I remember one of the first talks I heard on mob programming was a team in Europe. And one of his first slides was like showing like a hockey sports team. He's like, it's the first time I've actually felt like I'm on a sports team like this. What's your been experiences with team building via mobbing?
My experience is that it's tremendous. Now, I had one team that was already fairly well acquainted with each other. They called themselves Works for Food. And their big thing was going out to lunch regularly and eating together. But I've seen teams that weren't that close and suddenly became a lot closer. Mm-hmm. And that has been a real... It's wonderful, and particularly as a coach, when you suddenly see somebody's eyes light up, you know, that look when they finally get something and the whole team sees it and they know that that the team made a difference in that person's life. That person is now understanding something they didn't understand before. The other thing that I think is really important, and even before I got into mobbing, when I was doing things that are as dull as code inspections and running them formally, I always made sure that we had some really junior people and as well as senior people, because they asked the Emperor's New Clothes kind of questions. What does that code do and why? You know?
I like it. Yeah.
This may be the first time the senior dev who thought that he or she was being really, really clever discovered that they were being really, really obtuse.
Yeah.
And so the junior person is just providing huge benefit. And it may be the first time the junior person recognized that, hey, my ideas matter. And the senior person has an opportunity to show leadership and to grow everybody. My experience is that with things like mobbing and pairing to some degree, but particularly mobbing, you know, you can bring a junior dev up to intermediate or an intermediate one up to senior way, way faster than normally. And that benefits everybody.
Cool. Well, that
also
was...
it's a reason for the people to want to stay and work at a company. You know?
Yeah.
What kind of turnover do you have in your organization when you're mobbing all the time? My guess is fairly low. You know? You start to care about each other, you know, and you care about the work, and it makes a difference, and you see it come to fruition, and that makes you proud. And all of these human emotions with the intellectual strengths that you're building. I mean, it's just a really powerful combination.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is an incredible experience. It was very addicting for me, which is why I quickly searched for a place where I could do it all the time. So, all right. Well, I think we're about at time. So is there anything you'd like to share or plug before we close this show?
Sure. I will give you my LinkedIn. I will be speaking at on Canton Coders coming in September the 23rd. All you have to do is get on their site and register through the Everbright link. It's free. And I will be speaking about testing and what they didn't teach you in CS school, which is mostly anything. But I'll be talking about that a lot. I also have a bunch of slides on SlideShare that people might enjoy looking at. Not all of them are technical, but many of them are. LinkedIn, I'll give you links for all those things.
Fantastic.
And I just love working in mobbing. I think it's just so cool.
Me too.
All right. Well, so please like and subscribe. Please send us on Twitter, YouTube, and Camille's contact information as well. We'll put in the show notes. Please reach out to us with your questions, feedbacks, people you'd like to have on the show. We are all ears. And until next time, mob well and have a good one.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.